Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Put down your steamed hams and get ready for a perfectly cromulent night in Woodstock on Saturday. As part of the Woodstock Comedy Festival, four-time Emmy and Peabody winner Mike Reiss is headlining The Secrets of the Simpsons at the Bearsville Theater at 9:30 p.m. In addition to nearly three decades with America's favorite family, he's written plays, books, and worked on films like Ice Age and Kung Fu Panda. Mike Reiss, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
One of the other guests who was talking about the Woodstock Comedy Festival, Gilbert Gottfried, said once you start analyzing...
I hate the idea of following Gilbert Gottfried ever.
He was on a different day. Don't worry about it.
Okay, that's it. Saturday night, you're going to see Gilbert Gottfried, and then I think there's a half hour to return to sanity, and then it'll be me.
But anyway, he said that if you start analyzing comedy, it's not funny anymore. I find The Simpsons might be the only exception to that rule. What do you think?
I disagree completely. Yeah, I agree with Gilbert. I'll expound for one sec. Years ago, I used to write for Johnny Carson. And if anyone remembers, he used to do a bit called Karnak. And I wrote a joke for Karnak, and he did it that night on the air, and it bombed. And it bombed so badly, he couldn't even recover. He couldn't do one of those jokes like maybe the fleas of a thousand camels. It just sucked the air out of the studio. Every cliche, the joke bombed terribly, right? 6 months later, he's doing Karnak again, and I go to the stage, and I look at the cue cards, and I see somehow my terrible joke has come back. And it's there, and he's going to go on the air and do it again. And it was one of these things. We're taping. I couldn't stop the show. And he gets on, and he does that Karnak joke, and it killed. It got a huge ovation. And I go, well, that's a science experiment. Here's a controlled environment, same joke, wildly different reactions. And that's when I realized there is no science to comedy. You cannot pick it apart. You can't pull it apart.
But I still think, and you can disagree with me, that's fine, Simpsons fans, and I'm one, they like knowing the secret behind the joke or how many times it was rewritten or what the original gag was. I mean, that's why those DVD commentaries were so popular.
Yes, okay, I'll give you that. And I really love, again, I never can get into theorizing about comedy, but sometimes we do go ultra obscure or self-referential on the show. And yeah, I love it when people pick up on that. And It was a real eye-opener in the very early days of the show because The Simpsons came onto the scene right around the time as the early, early internet. And we would see fan chat rooms and we go, wow, they got that joke. They get what we're throwing out there.
Hmm. Actually, in preparing to speak with you, I listened back to a bunch of those. And I heard Al Jean, your partner, and then later co-showrunner, say that when you guys were on Carson, you only met him like a couple times in a few years.
That is correct. Yeah, I think I spent 90 minutes in his company in a year and a half.
Huh.
And at the end of a year and a half, he fired us. And then 2 weeks later, he tried to rehire us. And I go, wow, what did I learn in these 2 weeks?
But
that's the kind of man he was. There are people on the show who'd been fired five times.
And then you got him to be a guest star on the show.
Yeah, that was great. And he came on the show. He pretended to remember me. He was very smooth. I go, you don't know me. But he came on. He was a wonderful sport. And it was funny to see. It's literally the only thing Johnny Carson did after leaving The Tonight Show. His only appearance was on The Simpsons.
Rossi, how you holding up?
I'm kind of worried about the future. How do you deal with it?
Well, you've been on TV longer than I have. I'm sure you've saved up quite a nest egg.
Yeah. Do they still buy human hair down at the wig shop?
He came in. You know, he wasn't anywhere. He'd been off the air for at least a year. And he came in, and the Emmys had been on the night before. And he just walked into our studio and did a monologue. He did 5 minutes of original jokes about the Emmys the night before. It was a real treat.
Huh. How'd they land? I mean, you guys are a really esteemed writer's room.
Well, they were actually very funny jokes, but yeah, we would have laughed anyhow.
How did you two wind up at The Simpsons and then become, you know, the showrunner for seasons 3 and 4?
Seasons 3 and 4. Al Jean and I, we were roommates in college, and we started writing for the Harvard Lampoon together. And we were at Harvard Lampoon, and people from National Lampoon magazine read our stuff and hired us. So We went to National Lampoon, and I think if there were an International Lampoon, we would have gone off to that. But instead, we got a job offer in Hollywood. So we went to Hollywood, and we just bounced around TV for years and years. We had a different job every 10 months or so. And then it was one summer. We were on break, and someone called and said, we're starting this show called The Simpsons. Do you want to work on it? And I said, gee, you don't even know us. Why are you asking us? And they said, because everyone else has turned it down. And that was it. Nobody wanted to work on The Simpsons. It just sounded like such a dead end. You know, there hadn't been a cartoon in prime time for 30 years, you know, since The Flintstones. And it was on the Fox network, which was a brand new network, and no one knew if it would even be there from one year to the next. So I took the job. Al and I took the job at The Simpsons. And we didn't tell anyone what we were doing. We were so ashamed. We thought we'd hit rock bottom.
And now fast forward to 2016, you're still associated with the show?
Yes, I am. I go in there one day a week now. It's what I like at The Simpsons, we have a very big staff, and a lot of us have been there a long time, and nobody's been there longer than me. So I'm like a squatter. I'm just there. They can't get rid of me. They can't get me off their property. But everybody just works to the extent they still think they have something fresh to give. So there are people there who work 4 days a week or 3 days a week. And I have to say, after 28 years, I'm good for about one day of fresh material. So I'm thinking of cutting back to about 45 minutes a week.
Is there something the family hasn't done yet that you still have on your wish list?
That's a great question. It's the toughest thing about our job is coming up with new stories. Once someone comes in with a great story, the machine starts rolling and we can write the jokes and see how the town will react to it. But coming up with 22 stories we haven't done already out of 615 episodes, I think, that's really hard. Plus the fact that we do two or three storylines a week. So in answer to your question, no, I have one idea. I have one idea in my back pocket if anyone ever springs it on me to do an episode about. But we're running out. You know, once a year we have The Simpsons take a vacation to some country somewhere, and we're running out of countries. They've really been everywhere.
Yeah, I think I heard you say in one of the commentaries they've even been arrested at every location at this point.
They've been arrested, and every single member of The Simpsons family has been in jail at one time. And in fact, Marge, you know, the least likely suspect, she just went to jail a second time at the end of last season. The show is slowly turning into Orange is the New Black. It's gradually becoming a prison show.
You know, I'm a Simpsons fan. I'm sure you meet them all the time. But I am a defender of the later seasons. And in fact, I hope it never goes off the air, really and truly. But have you ever thought about a last episode and what that might look like?
You know, we've been thinking about a last episode since the first season, since the very first season we were writing there. I'll tell you a funny side story, which was we were pitching around episodes for the first season of The Simpsons, and episode six, halfway through the run, we had this idea, why don't we kill Homer? We're going to kill Homer, and then second act will be a funeral, third act is Marge dating again, going through the grieving process. And then the next week, we'd come back, and Homer was alive again. And we just wouldn't ever mention it. And that was how we were thinking in the very early days of the show. We thought we could get away with this stuff. And thank God we didn't do it. I think people would have been very, very upset. And now I forgot the question. Oh, how we're going to end the show. So, no, we've never had a good idea for it. And then about, I'm going to say 5 years ago, it looked like The Simpsons was going to go off the air. And it was going to go off. Not because of ratings. The ratings were great and the quality was still good. We were still winning Emmys. It was going to go off the air because the show was wildly over budget. And that's only because everyone's been there so long. Everyone gets an incremental raise every year. So we found out, gee, the janitor's making $700,000 a year. What? So we had to trim the budget way back. But we thought the show was going to end 5 years ago. And we said, how are we going to end it? The end is near. And then we just got an episode back, fully animated from Korea, and it was a Christmas show, and it was set in the future, and it showed what The Simpsons would be like 20 years from now. And It was a great episode and sort of tied up loose ends, and we would end on a Christmas show, and the show had begun on a Christmas show.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect ending, and we were so happy. Hey, we found a way to end The Simpsons. And then Fox came in and said, no, you can do another 200 of them. And we go, oh, crap. I don't know. I hope it will just go forever and ever. We work a year in advance on the show, so I know now what you're going to be seeing next May. And it's a really solid season coming up.
I can't wait. We're speaking with Mike Reese, and he'll be at the Woodstock Comedy Festival on Saturday for The Secrets of The Simpsons. I have a couple quick specific questions, and if you're not the right person to ask, then we can just cut this out. But
okay.
Two specific things that recur on the show. How did Yoink start, and how did Lenny getting things in his eye start?
Yoink, I think George Meyer, who, many, many Simpsons stories, the answer is George Meyer.
Okay.
And he came up with, I remember sitting there, and he pitched it. Someone grabbed something and said, yoink. And he didn't invent it. It's from Archie Comics. I remember that was a sound effect you would see in Archie Comics a lot. When someone would grab something, you'd see yoink. So we took that one. And what was, Lenny getting stuff in the eye. I don't remember that. I get the feeling, I don't remember how it started. I can sort of picture, I think it's around season 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny got something in his eye. The way these things usually happen is Lenny gets something in his eye, and about a year later, someone pitches, how about Lenny gets something in his eye? And when someone else will say, we did that already, and we go, let's make it a runner. That's his character. Lenny gets stuff in his eye. So we've done that. We've done that to death by now. He's really had a lot of stuff in his eye.
And does that?
There was a runner I liked. We used to turn up, which was that Homer was an expert on the Supreme Court. He was a prize idiot, but he knew everything about the history of the Supreme Court. And we've had 3 jokes about it over the years, but not enough quite to make it a runner.
It's a good time for some of those, so we'll keep our eyes out, I guess.
Another one like that. I'll just throw one more in. I'm sorry. After 28 years, I have way too many stories. And none of these
coming.
Are what you'll hear Saturday night, which is Skinner has a toupee. Skinner has had a toupee, Principal Skinner, since season 1. And we're always putting in jokes about it and then cutting them at the last minute. And so I don't think we've ever alluded to it on the show, but we know it. And it's just one of those things we just never have gotten around to mentioning.
Oh, wow. My mind is blown.
Your mind is easily blown.
Yes, it is. Another technical question for you. A bunch of years back now, the show went into HD, and a lot of times from the early seasons you worked on, you would talk about getting the rough draft, the animatic back, and having to rework things. And I wonder how the switch to HD changed the way the show is put together.
It's made the show much, much harder. The show was never easy to do, but now with HDTV, HD, we just have to put a lot more jokes in. It is even more incumbent on us to put funny things in the background, funny signs everywhere, because you can see them. One of the killers happened recently where we just had a scene where Lisa was in the library, and in old days of TV, you would just, the spines of the books, the titles of the books would either be blank or we'd Greek them. That's the term where it would just be a little squiggle instead of words. But it's HD. You can read the books. So we had to sit there and write 30 funny titles for books. And they're in there. You can freeze them. You can read all the jokes. So we're not going to send Lisa to the library anymore.
I wouldn't even think about that. I mean, and it's a really good point, too, because there are always those background references that you need pause for now.
Yeah. Somebody called the show when we were beginning. They said, it's the first VCR show. And it was the first time we would put in jokes that you couldn't see unless you had the technology to stop the show and look at it.
Why did you flock to animation? I mean, I know you've worked in The Simpsons and done a lot of other animated things. What is it about the medium you like?
I love it. I have to say, I love it because I don't have to work with actors. And now, mind you, we work with brilliant actors on The Simpsons, and we bring in more brilliant actors, and they're wonderful and easygoing, but we don't have to deal with them as people. You know, Homer Simpson is the greatest character in the world to write for because He's got everything a comedy writer loves. He's fat, he's stupid, he's bald, he's lazy, he's an alcoholic. In season four, we decided, oh, he smells too. and if this was a real person, we couldn't do that to them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of the show Roseanne. Roseanne was a show about a hippopotamus married to an elephant. And Roseanne on that show would insult everybody. And nobody would ever say, Roseanne, shut up, you fat pig. Nobody would ever allude to her weight because it was her show and she was the boss and she ran things. So you couldn't make fun of the actress. But with The Simpsons, we have free reign that, you know, we don't have to pull back with our characters. There's also, of course, just the freedom of being able to go anywhere and do anything. The Simpsons, you know, came on the air at a time where Bill Cosby was the top show on TV. And it was just people sitting on a couch every week. And it was... And Roseanne was Roseanne sitting on a couch every week. And in fact, the liveliest TV show on the air at that time was The Golden Girls. That was as energetic as TV got. So then we came on with The Simpsons. We were able to go anywhere, and it was incumbent on us to make the show move as fast as possible.
My last question for you, I rewatched Lisa Goes to Washington, one of your very famous episodes. And if I have this right, you're first as the showrunner.
That is correct.
And for people who haven't seen her, maybe don't remember, Lisa wins an essay contest, goes to Washington, and is immediately turned off by some corruption that she witnesses. I don't know what year that was, 91 or so?
Oh, 90. I'm going to say 91, yes.
And in the context of this election season, how current it felt. And I wonder if, while you guys were working on it, if you had the long-term impact in mind.
Certainly not. No. No, I mean, there are better examples of that. There's certainly, in the year 2000, we did a future episode where we wanted to see sort of this dystopian future. And somebody said, gee, the world sure went to hell after we elected Donald Trump president. So that was 16 years ago. And but then I was thinking, gee, how would we handle Donald Trump, the whole Donald Trump campaign on The Simpsons? Because, you know, we can't be current. We never do topical material because it takes us a year to make the show. So I said, well, instead of Donald Trump, we'd make it Mr. Burns, another rich, you know, evil baron. And instead of president, well, we'd scale it down and have Burns run for governor against a very competent woman. And I go, oh, wait, we did that episode 27 years ago. It was the 14th episode we did. You know, when The Simpsons makes fun of what's going on in the world, that's satire. But when the world starts doing what they saw in The Simpsons, that's scary.
Mike Reiss will be at the Woodstock Comedy Festival on Saturday night. And The Secret of The Simpsons begins at the Bearsville Theater at 9:30. Mike, I can just say you've brought so much joy into my life through your work. And I really appreciate your time, and smell you later.
Thanks a lot.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.